Welcome to a special disaster edition of It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudman. Ron, isn't every edition of the podcast a disaster edition?
Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
2 weeks you were on the road. Andrea Seabrook was here filling in for you ably, but we always miss you.
Thank you.
And it's good to have you back. And it is the disaster edition because we have survived in this week not only Ken's return, but also an earthquake. 5.9, I believe, was the official.
But no. Actually, yes. S&P downgraded to 2.0.
But Politico reported it was 7.5, yeah. Based on, you know, unnamed sources. And then also, we are about to have Hurricane Irene.
And
that's coming right on the heels of Hurricane Michelle. That was quite a storm.
What about Hurricane Carter?
Well, I got to tell you, this has been a very exciting couple of weeks, both in the markets. My gosh, I mean, I don't know about you, but
I know,
my 401k.
I bought bread and milk.
I got to tell you. How bad was it?
Wait a minute. You know, I missed the. See, you know why it's a disaster, besides the fact that I'm back here? I missed all the good stuff. I missed Tim Pawlenty dropping out.
Was a disaster.
Tim Pawlenty, Rick Perry.
I had my entire 401k in Pawlenty.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's good and plenty. Wait, that's a face I don't see too often.
It's a face you see way too often.
But so anyway, basically I would like to know that in the wake of Rick Perry joining the fold, it seemed like for the longest time, all we talked about was Michelle Bachmann. And by talking about Michelle Bachmann, nobody talked about Tim Pawlenty, and he saw the writing on the wall.
She knocked him right out.
But now who's talking about Michelle Bachmann anymore?
Rick Perry knocked her right out. Now, she may be back. I don't expect to hear from Tim Pawlenty again anytime soon. In fact, he just announced this week he's not going to even run for the Senate. But
against Amy Klobuchar.
That's correct. And she would be the Democrat who's up this year, so that would be appropriate, but he's not going to do it.
Right.
Anyway, I don't expect to hear more from Tim Pawlenty. I do expect to hear more from Michelle Bachmann, even though she seems to have really been knocked off her pins by this huge Rick Perry outburst.
And actually, the person who may suffer the most of it is the ostensible frontrunner. We talked about how Mitt Romney had everything going for him, the money, the endorsements, the organization, the polling.
The hair. And now he doesn't even have the hair.
No,
I think Perry's hair is right up
that's
there.
Right. He is the hair apparent. That's right. You're making that face again, Ron. It's the same face.
Only face I have. Okay.
But wait a second. Does that mean that Rick Perry will now be eclipsed by George Pataki?
That's a possibility. No.
Not a possibility.
Not a possibility. No. But let me just back up here just a little bit and explain. And this is in the category of mea culpa, and it's not the first time
he ran against Bloomberg.
Let's admit it. I admit it. I didn't think Rick Perry would run.
I wasn't sure either.
3 or 4 months ago. No. And of course, as he moved further and further down the road and made more and more preparations, we had to kind of hedge our bets. But we never really turned around and said, we believe Rick Perry's going to run. I don't believe on this podcast.
No.
If the listener knows better, I would really
like
the listener to correct
me. Towards the end, we said, we don't know. For the longest time, we said we didn't think he was going to run.
That was a brave shift that we shifted all the way to don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were on top of that one. So now Rick Perry is in. Rasmussen poll came out right away and said he was at 29%. We all went, how could he be up that high so soon? And then out came the Gallup poll and said exactly the same thing, 29%, eclipsing both Mitt Romney and Michelle Bachmann, really eclipsing Michelle Bachmann in some polls. And did we miss the juggernaut that was rolling right up to our door and we didn't hear it?
Well, we did say that should Rick Perry get in the race, what does it mean for Michelle Bachmann? Because basically, not only the Mitt Romney candidates, but they were also the appeal to the conservative Tea Party wing of the party.
That's right, the Tea Evangelicals, people who are both Tea Party sympathizers and also probably social issue conservatives and in many cases religious evangelicals.
Right, right. And so Rick Perry is interesting. The guy who endorsed Rudy Giuliani in 2008.
And Al Gore in 1988.
He worked for Al Gore, but how do you endorse Rudy Giuliani? What's the argument for that?
I think that Rick Perry is a particular kind of politician, and we're going to get a long chance to look at him and talk about him here, but I think Rick Perry is showing us that he is at base, at root, in his DNA, he's a politician. This is a guy who came out of the service back in the 1970s and basically went pretty close to right into politics. He got into politics very early, didn't really establish another kind of career in business or law or something, although originally he had thought about being a veterinarian, didn't have the grades for it, went into politics. And he seems to have a political instinct that would suggest to him in 1988 the horse to be on was Al Gore, and maybe it was.
In Texas it was.
In
Texas
at that time, in the Southern Democratic politics of that moment.
Right.
And also that told him in the post-9/11 era, Rudy Giuliani is the guy, and a lot of people thought this 4 or 5 years ago. A lot of people thought Rudy Giuliani was going to be the guy to beat. for the Republicans in 2008. It just never happened.
Whose team does he want to be on now?
The Rick Perry team.
Well, is it the Jesus team? Because he didn't used to be quite so super religious as we've seen him this summer, organizing this big day of prayer, this big response, as it was called, in Houston in a sports arena.
He's been endorsed by God in advance of the South Carolina primary.
Well, and that's very important, yes, because, as we know, the South Carolina primary does tend to indicate which way the South will go, and which way the South will go pretty much determines who will be the Republican nominee.
And since the South Carolina primary was instituted in
1980,
every person who has won the Republican primary has gone on to win the nomination.
That is pretty strong record. Stronger than Iowa, stronger than New Hampshire, stronger than
dirt.
Exactly. Yeah. So we see Rick Perry as a formidable candidate at this point.
At this point,
even if we failed to see that at a point where it could have done us some good.
But no, but what is it? We're still talking about August, September 2011. I mean, I know we're getting closer and closer to Iowa and New Hampshire, but to say that we missed something, well, it could change again. I mean, I still think, you know, George Pataki, first of all, he's never lost a race. He beat Mario Cuomo despite Mayor Giuliani's endorsement.
Okay,
of Mario Cuomo.
Somewhere buried in your answer is a little piece of information. Who is George Pataki?
George Pataki,
former governor
of New York.
There you go.
And he's always been an opponent, a rival of Mayor Giuliani.
Somewhat.
Ever since Giuliani endorsed Mario Cuomo in the 94 gubernatorial race, because he wanted to become the next governor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so the rivalry has always been there. So I wonder if maybe what Pataki is doing is just giving a little
twist of the knife? I'm helping the listener here, since your gestures are probably not going to be audible on the podcast.
No, like your face.
And in fact, there is this longstanding thing between the two men, which I would tend to suspect is at work here. And Giuliani doesn't want to say he's not going to run until Pataki says he won't run.
This is silly.
It is silly, particularly because I don't see either one of them building a campaign.
Who cares
about them? They have ads. They have had ads. Pataki has put an ad on in New Hampshire. But do they have people on the ground? Do they have any kind of real campaign organization? Yeah. Can you imagine either of them in Iowa?
No.
Not New Hampshire? South Carolina?
I don't imagine them in New York.
I can't imagine them in the Republican Party, quite frankly. They're anachronisms, and they're very limited to a Northeastern appeal. And I think it's probably just a vanity sort of thing on their part and on the part of the New York media, who have to have a New York horse in every race.
I know. They were very upset when Malcolm Wilson decided not to run.
Terribly upset.
Especially because he died several decades
ago. I was very upset.
But you know what? We're talking about the Giuliani and Pataki kind of Republican Party that is almost being espoused, in a sense, by John Huntsman.
John Huntsman is the former governor of Utah, former Obama administration ambassador to China, and somebody who, when he started talking about running for president, a lot of folks thought might be formidable, or at least viable.
Yeah.
What happened to John Huntsman?
Well, what happened is basically he spent as much time criticizing his own party as he is President Obama. Yes, he says that President Obama is taking the country too far to the left. I'm a center-right conservative. But he's pointed out things that perhaps Michelle Bachmann have said, things that Rick Perry has said that may be too extreme for his brand of Republicanism, which once upon a time was, I thought, a majority view in the Republican Party, but that's no longer the case. But I mean, now look, I think the electorate, we saw this with Tim Pawlenty too, the electorate is angry. Huntsman is not an angry candidate. If most of his anger is directed at his own party, this may go great in a Republican caucus or a primary, but it's not going to do well in November general election.
Yes, but of course, while that may be accurate commentary, you don't run for president with accurate commentary.
No.
You run for president by getting a sizable proportion of your own party excited about your candidacy, and that doesn't seem to have happened for John Huntsman. The one debate he's been in, he was quite forgettable.
Right. The thing is, and if you remember, we talk about John McCain. I mean, John McCain seemed to have won the nomination in 2008 despite everything he stood for. There were a lot of splits with the conservatives, with Huckabee and Thompson and Romney and all those guys. But also, it wasn't until he picked Sarah Palin for the ticket where conservatives said, well, maybe I can get excited about him. But ultimately, the combination of the faltering economy, the unpopularity of the Republican brand, and the fact that he just was not somebody to get excited about doomed him in 2008, and I think that's dooming Huntsman as well.
So it would seem, although some people believe he's really interested in 2016 and may be back, Mitt Romney, the former governor of Massachusetts, who, as we have said many times, is the putative front runner, and we've both, I think, at least I have, bought into the idea that he will emerge, even if he isn't really the ideal candidate for this moment of anger and this moment of rejection of President Obama's administration, he would emerge in the end as the conventional, the compromise, the most acceptable, the most electable Republican out of this whole field.
Who wants to compromise, though? I mean, he may be Ed Muskie for all we know, because, you know, you had the Democratic Party saying, you know, we hate the war and get out of Vietnam.
1972.
And it was George McGovern, and Ed Muskie became the centrist, almost boring status quo candidate. And has Mitt Romney put himself in that position? I mean, look, again, we still have months to go. I mean, 2 weeks ago or whatever, we were calling Mitt Romney the inevitable nominee, or at least the putative front runner.
Yes, certainly.
But I don't know if, you know, I don't know if this is the right time for Mitt Romney.
Well, I think Perry knocking him off of his pedestal as the putative frontrunner is maybe even a good thing for him, because it may build a little bit of a fire under him and his campaign, and he may come back stronger. On the other hand, thus far, it just seems to have knocked him off balance.
Debates will make a debate. The next debate, I guess,
September 7th,
right,
in Simi Valley, with the Air Force One in the background, right. And it is at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, and this is a great site for Republicans recalling the glory years of Ronald Reagan and the image. So that should be an opportunity for Romney, if he is going to be able to take an opportunity, to show up these other candidates if he really is so much better prepared and so much more presidential.
We'll see if Michelle Bachmann is still worth talking about, because, you know, I thought she did very well in her maiden debate performance right after she declared, and she declared.
Yeah, that's right. I thought so too, but not so well maybe in the next one. Got caught up fighting with Tim Pawlenty.
Well, you're right.
Cheapened, in effect, the impact of the Ames straw poll, which she won barely over Ron Paul, and now it just seems as though she hasn't been able to get traction again in competition with Rick Perry and the new field.
You just mentioned Ron Paul. We haven't talked about him, and nobody seems to be talking about him, and I know there's always been the feeling among the Ron Paul folks that we give him short shrift, but he had only got a handful of votes, fewer than Michelle Bachmann. Everybody talked about what a great victory for Michelle Bachmann, but nobody said anything about Ron Paul. We say, well, you know, Ron Paul always does well in straw polls, but what does that mean? First of all, he did get three times as many votes that he got 4 years ago in the Iowa straw poll, and two, if you look at some of the polls, the Gallup poll showed him
around 10% or 12%, something like that.
But dead even with President Obama, which is...
Well, but that I believe is, you know, are you voting for Obama or the generic Republican? My guess is there are more Ron Paul people than there were 4 years ago,
yeah.
But they will not be the great voice of the Republican Party in these primaries either, although Paul will probably do better in these primaries than he did 4 years ago. I don't think he's going to be one of the last two or three candidates. We've also had some announcements this week with regard to Senate races. One that surprised me out in Utah, Jason Chaffetz decided not to take on longtime incumbent Orrin Hatch.
This was a big surprise, because for the longest time, everybody was saying that he was going to run. He was going to do to Orrin Hatch what the conservatives and Mike Lee and the Tea Party did to Bob Bennett in Utah.
The other incumbent of long, long standing.
Right. And again, and what they have in Utah, even though they say that Orrin Hatch could beat Chaffetz in a primary, they don't have primaries too often in Utah. They have state conventions where the most conservative of the conservatives show up. And if that was the case, Orrin Hatch, who's been in the Senate since 1977, who is, in anybody's book, is pretty conservative for the Chaffetz-Mike Lee wing of the Republican Party. So
why not run against him?
Well, first of all, he had been pretty active in the debt ceiling conversations. He's building a name for himself in the House. He also said it would cost millions and millions of dollars to take on Hatch.
But Jason Chaffetz has money.
Yes, he hasn't raised that much, but he has personal money, that's true. Did you know that his father used to be married to Kitty Dukakis?
That is correct.
Before she was Kitty Dukakis?
That is right.
How about
before
that?
She was Kitty Dukakis, she was Kitty Chaffetz.
How do you like that?
I don't know if I like that.
Oh, it's a little interesting.
Well, I think it's kind of...
Unlike this podcast. But, so anyway, so that was a big surprise, and Chaffetz insists that Orrin Hatch is not out of the woods. There still will be a conservative opponent to him.
And that may be enough. It may just need to be someone who is an opponent. However, I believe in this case, you're going to need money. You're going to need money to win this one. And if Jason Chaffetz doesn't see the percentage in doing it, I find it hard to believe somebody else who has the means will.
Now, another big name who's not running for the Senate is Russ Feingold, announced this week that he will not seek to win back his Senate seat that he lost in 2010. This is for the seat that Herb Kohl is retiring.
It would be unnatural for him to come snapping back, like Slade Gorton, say, for example, some years ago in Washington State, and say, okay, you knocked me out of one seat, maybe I'll run for the other seat, maybe I'll win it.
Right.
But he has stepped back, Tammy Baldwin, the congresswoman from Madison, Wisconsin. Looks like she may very well be the favorite for that Democratic nod, although that's not a done deal
yet. She's getting tons of money from, first of all, she's openly gay. She's getting tons of money from gay, lesbian, progressive, feminist groups around the country. I suspect that she is the Democratic nominee. So for Republicans to say, oh, you know, we could be Tammy Baldwin statewide, the Republicans are not having an easy time of it either. Tommy Thompson is
many-term governor.
Four-term governor of Wisconsin, ostensibly talking about a comeback for the Senate next year, but he's constantly being attacked by Club for Growth, who said that he's an Obama clone, that he's raised taxes so many times. Club for Growth is spending more time attacking Tommy Thompson than they are attacking the Democrats.
Well, Club for Growth has been about trying to purge the Republican Party of what it calls rhinos, Republicans in name only, and I would not have thought Tommy Thompson was an obvious target for that kind of an accusation, but he was governor for a long time in a blue state, and he obviously made a lot of compromises with what was often a Democratic legislature, and so he's going to have that kind of record. But I think a lot of people are expressing a certain amount of Thompson fatigue, too, in Wisconsin, and they want to move on to some new face like Paul Ryan or Scott Walker, the governor that they elected last year. So, you know, there's a youth movement among conservatives and certainly in the Tea Party in Wisconsin.
Although they talk about Mark Newman, the former congressman, coming back and running against Tommy Thompson.
But he never won statewide office. He was always kind of the guy who was just a little bit too conservative to get there. Maybe this is his year.
Now, other people who are not running for the Senate, you mentioned earlier that Tim Pawlenty will not run against Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota. Colleen Hanabusa, the freshman congresswoman from Hawaii, says she will not run for Daniel Akaka's seat. Akaka this week turns 167. 7 years old.
That's correct.
Which is very exciting in news.
And that is a record for a Democratic senator from Hawaii.
No, it's not. In a way, it's 193 in the shade.
I'm sorry. I stand corrected.
Yes, well, you know. But so it looks like it'll be Mazie Hirono, the other congresswoman from Hawaii, running against former Congressman Ed Case for the Democratic nomination, and the Republicans are trying to get Linda Lingle, the former governor, to run for the Senate.
That's right. They've been trying to get her to run for the Senate seat for some while.
And the last Republican to win a Senate seat in Hawaii?
The first senator from Hawaii was a Republican.
And that is the last Republican to win a Senate seat. And his name sounds like
Bernard.
Oh, you're so close. Hiram Fung. God, you were so close.
I know. I had a letter in common. Okay, one other one in Florida.
That's right. Alan West, one of two African-American Republicans in the House from South Florida, he announced that he will not join the Republican PAC to take on Bill Nelson next year.
Big news from the no's for the Senate. What about people who decided to run for the Senate?
Well,
who are the yeses?
We've gotten rid of the no's. Let's talk about the mouth.
All right.
And that, yes. And that would be
Chris Shays.
Chris Shays, a Republican from Connecticut, defeated for re-election in 2008 in the Democratic tie there. Kind of a moderate liberal Republican.
Definitely.
He held on that seat far longer than anybody expected, but he was personally popular. Now he wants to run for the seat that Joe Lieberman, the independent, is giving up in 2012. The problem, of course, for Chris Shays is, one, he may be far more liberal than the Republican Party in Connecticut.
And the other is Ding Ding, back for another match.
Linda McMahon, the former wrestling executive who has spent $50 million of her own money to run in 2010.
Chris Shays will not have $50 million of his own money.
Or $50. So it may be a tough battle for him. But there's also Senate news in Massachusetts.
This is interesting. Elizabeth Warren, who was the woman who came down here and set up the new Consumer Protection Agency for financial services for banks for the Obama administration, but never got the job to actually head the agency because there was such a phalanx of opposition among Republicans in the Senate. She could never even be nominated. So now she's back up in Massachusetts, where she has some degree of notoriety. She's been a Harvard professor. People know who she is. She's been high profile because of this business down in Washington. She's trying to parlay that into a political career, starting at the Senate level, running against the still pretty popular Scott Brown.
Scott Brown is the most popular politician in Massachusetts, which was pretty remarkable, although it was interesting. There was a Google ad this week by supporters of Elizabeth Warren, and they said, "We need Elizabeth Warren to defeat Scott Walker." They had the name wrong. They meant Scott Brown.
Is there a reason that Democrats are turning to somebody like Elizabeth Warren, who doesn't really have a track record as a candidate?
Well, first of all, most of the Democrats don't seem to be really happy with the candidates who are already in the race, some of whom tried in that special election in January of 2010. Also, she's a national figure. She's a liberal icon, and the progressive wing of the Democratic Party would love somebody to fight for. Now, what's interesting, this could also help Scott Brown with the Tea Party, because he's had some falling out with the right wing of the party that helped elect him. But if Elizabeth Warren is a Democratic alternative, they may rally behind Scott Brown.
Yeah, I think you'd have to expect Scott Brown to move a little bit to the center in the state of Massachusetts if he wants to get reelected, which he clearly does.
The last Republican was Hiram Fong.
A strong favorite to be reelected at this stage. We'll see what kind of candidate she turns into.
But before we leave,
we have to note that down in Mississippi, they're having a gubernatorial election in November. And in the Democratic primary for governor of Mississippi, Johnny Dupree, who is a black mayor in Mississippi,
mayor of Hattiesburg,
was nominated.
Right.
So the Democrats now have an African-American man as their nominee for the governor of Mississippi. How's he going to do in November?
He's not going to do well. First of all, African-Americans do comprise 37% of the Mississippi population, which is, I think, perhaps the largest in the country. That or Louisiana.
It's among the first several.
It's up there. But Phil Bryant is still, Mississippi still seems to be a Republican state. Haley Barbour, the term-limited, two-term governor,
would be reelected if he were running.
Very popular. His lieutenant governor, Phil Bryant, has a ton of money, is likely to win. But it is interesting that in the state of Mississippi, there is an African-American candidate for governor. But you're missing the big story of the week, Ron. Levi Johnston announced he will not run for mayor of Wasilla because he wants to continue his book tour telling the truth about the Palin family.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You look stunned there. You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Welcome back, Ken.
Thanks.
Join us again next week for